and welcome to episode 64 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Sydney.
Today we're talking about our weekend at Gamehole Con. We taught games, we talked games, we went to a party, and we even played a game or two. And we'll talk about it. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patron, Jason Rodney.
Again.
A huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well. Way to update the notes, Chris.
Yeah, so our first announcement is we are recording literally at our booth at Gamehole Con in a convention center. So it might be a little echoey. I think it'll sound okay, but if you hear background noise, that's what's going on. Kitty and I and Sydney are all driving back separately. Well, Sydney and I are coming back together, but we are like, let's just record at the show. Well, everything's fresh in our mind. So there's two things. One, the notes, the notes are great. They're fantastic. But what I didn't get to I didn't get to a time to actually be able to draw a winner for our contest. So I allowed a few people at the convention to enter last minute. The winner will be announced next week, I promise, along with our next giveaway. All of that will be taken care of. No issues whatsoever. Also, I still haven't had a chance to kickstart anything. It makes me so sad. I'm going to probably have like 4 Kickstarters next week.
You bought enough here. That's cool.
I do. And I have a list of everything I bought here. So it's going to make me feel good.
I'm really excited to talk about some of the stuff we bought here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't have an input thread for this one because how do you input to Gamehole Con? So, well, I guess there's a ways to input. You just be here. We did meet a couple of our listeners and we'll talk about them. But we did get a couple questions via email. So that's what our off topic is going to be. So Kitty, why don't we just jump directly into that? So we have a lot more time to talk about this weekend.
All right. So we have a question from Paul. How do you guys deal with tilt in board games? For example, when I was playing Arcadia Quest, I was going for a quest with my character and got 99% of the way to my objective when the NPC had some ridiculously lucky rolls and killed my characters. Another player came in and took my objective without doing any of the work. How do you guys get back into a game when something like this happens and not tilt off the face of the earth?
Yeah, what do you guys think?
Well, usually I feel better by heckling the person who took my luck a little bit. But the actual in-game, basically just trying a new strategy, maybe thinking longer term, or in something like Arcadia Quest, there you play round after round after round, so maybe trying to recover next round.
I don't. I don't know if that's helpful advice, Paul, but I'm not too bad anymore, but I have been known to I'm going to sit here and pout because if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Oh, you're so much nicer than I am.
I mean, there's a difference between helpful heckling and I'm going to unmake a friend right now kind of anger at a move. So it's best for me to just simmer down for a while.
Especially when the board did it to you. Like, you worked super hard. The board screws you over. But then somebody else, it's their best move to take it away from you. You can't really blame them, but then you're still mad at them.
So this is how I handle this. I remember it's just a game. Now, I may or may not be the person that came in and took the objective away from him afterwards.
I think you were.
Not sure. But I think what it is with, you can get exhausted with games, right? You play a lot of games. You keep getting screwed by the deck. You keep getting screwed by the dice. You keep getting upset about what's going on. There's a number of different games where there's things that are random. And those things are just going to happen. They're completely out of your control. If you play a game that has that random element, you have to accept that that's okay. It's okay that it can swing both ways. Sometimes you just get really lucky as well. I think the real thing here is you remember the times you were screwed way more than you remember the times where the luck was on your side. So you always think it's against you.
It's all right. He came back and won the next scenario.
Yeah. I also, I still remember a lot of times where luck was on my side, especially when playing a game like Risk, where you have, one little soldier defending your territory. I cannot tell you how good that feels, and you're just rolling against the invading horde, and you're defending with six after six after six, and you're like, ha, 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 and you just feel invincible. So those moments balance them out.
Sometimes. I'm just, in my perception, though, I think that people remember the negatives more. But the trick is really just keep playing. Play again. Let it wash off of you. The dice will bounce back the other way later. And for me, when I play a game, I'm playing the game to have fun. Whether or not I win or lose is, you know, yes, everyone wants to win. But if the journey to the victory isn't fun, you're spending a long time. You're committing, you're committing a 2-hour game. If you're not having fun for those 2 hours and it won't be fun unless you win at the end, you might want to not play that kind of game.
Yeah.
You know, have fun.
I typically don't.
Yeah.
And that goes back to my, I don't like this kind of situation. I'm not going to get over it quickly. So I tend to stray away from this kind of game. I prefer a different style.
Yeah. That said, Paul, Arcadia Quest, we'll start that up again in a weekend or two, and I will continue to destroy you with the NPCs and amazing dice rolls.
Jessica and I will come from behind. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have one more question. Oh.
From Leanne. Leanne Verhulst. Chris, you've mentioned that for most, all of your games, that you put all of the game components into plastic bags instead of using the insert that comes with the game. Do you just throw away all of those inserts? And if so, have there been times that you've really regretted that decision?
Never. I have never, ever once regretted throwing away the insert, except for how much space it takes in the trash.
Because it really takes up so much space in our trash cans. Yeah. It is ridiculous.
And that's why I have to
throw
tear
away
it down.
Stinky, gross stuff because they were full of game components.
Yeah. And so like a lot of like the molded inserts, for example, like the plastic molded ones, those ones are really hard to collapse. Now, some of them are just what they call trench inserts. So it's a way of making the inside of the box smaller than the outside of the box. It's a reverse TARDIS effect. So those ones, when you take them out, you can just kind of fold them up and they break down pretty easily. But the molded ones, which cost a ton to make, those ones are really hard to break down. But they're also my least favorite kind of insert because everything has to go in its fiddly right place. And if you put the box on its side, it falls all over the place. And it just doesn't. Yeah, I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. Today, go ahead.
I can kind of like segue this into this weekend. Yep. Chris brought all the games. They were all in plastic bags. I cannot tell you how easy and nice the setup was for all of those games, especially ones where all of the player components were in their individual bags already. And I can just hand it to the player and then they can familiarize themselves a little bit with the pieces as they unpack their bag.
And that was after having them in the trunk for a 2-hour drive.
Yep. Sliding around in the car. Nothing was out of place or...
And some of those games I had packed before I started writing on all of the bags to say, okay, this is what everything goes where. And the games where that had everything started out great was fantastic. When you're putting it away, though, it's like, I have an extra spare bag. Where does this need to go?
Yeah.
And now I'm going to take them back and I'm going to rebag them and mark them. Because the games that actually had, you know, what components go in each, every player was able to say, oh, this is the bag for this. This is the bag for this. And they were immediately able to help, even though they'd never played the game before, didn't know me, it wasn't their game.
There's something about finishing the game, putting it away feels like part of ending the game.
Yep. So, yeah, I have never regretted it. And I will say, the cheap bags, I have Blood Rage, I think. No. One of the games that we played this weekend still had like sandwich bags that I was using. And they were okay at the time. I really, really like my 4mm, 4x5 bags, though, because they're very sturdy, easy to write on with a marker. They feel comfortable, like they're not going to break or anything. They're not all flimsy.
There were a few plastic sandwich bags that had Viking swords poking through them by the end of cleaning up Blood Rage today.
Yep. So I put the links on a number of the different shows in the past. I'm going to put links to them again in the show notes here. I've also had a question like, when you say show notes, what do you mean? I really just mean the stuff that goes along with the podcast. So when we post the podcast, we post it in like a blog post. And
that, on our website.
On our website. And that gets translated over to iTunes or any other podcast, wherever you happen to download the podcast. So that's what we're putting them there. Also, last week, it occurred to me that maybe all these links that we talk about, following us on Facebook and Twitter and all that, I should put in the show notes.
You
I'm going to do that too.
All right.
Yay.
So if you look at the show notes, you want to know how to find us on Twitter or find us on Facebook or find us on Board Game Geek, all of those links will be at the bottom of the show notes.
And clickable.
And clickable. Clickable in many applications. Some applications, maybe not, but you can copy paste them. And I will put links to the baggies that I use as well. And if you guys want to make fun of the way I say bog, bag, I don't know.
If you want to say it like you're from Chicago, just hold your nose.
Wait. Bag.
There you go. Yeah, that sounded normal to me.
So I'm going to just plug my nose anytime I say bag, bag.
Yep, there you go.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, maybe we should talk about Gamehole Con and get me out of this. One second.
In this episode, we're talking about our time here at Gamehole Con. We may be exhausted, but we had a great time. And now we'll talk about the games that were played and the people that played them.
So I made a list that we have a bunch of bullet points of the chronological order of what happened here.
Yeah.
The time here just flew by.
It really was crazy.
Yeah. So Kitty and I got here Thursday night.
Afternoon, really.
Afternoon.
We pulled in around 3. Yeah. Yep.
And I went to a dinner for a special guest and kind of like hobnobbed with the group and such. And then came back and, you know, we were studying for games because we did teach a bunch of games. But a lot of these games we haven't played for several months because, you know, us.
Playing new things.
Yeah. Always playing the new stuff.
Also time for the Josh bashing to come out. A lot of these games Chris picked thinking that Josh was going to teach them. So they were Josh style games. And then I ended up teaching them and I'm like, this is not my thing. Yeah.
So, and to make matters worse, we were triple booked at 2:00 on Friday.
Yes.
And Sydney hadn't joined us yet.
I had work.
Yeah. So Kitty was teaching 2 games at the same time. And yeah, it was Friday was in phenomenal. But there was a lot going on and we'll cover all that. And then Sydney showed up on Friday night
after work and it was fantastic. Yep.
Saturday was fantastic. Today it's Sunday, early afternoon right now.
Things are winding down.
Yes. It's like, we're done teaching all our games.
Some people here are still going strong though. Props to them.
Yeah. So it's games true. Go until like 4:00 in the afternoon. Wow. So people are still playing some games. I do want to give a shout out to our booth.
Mates.
They're sure. Like just to our right. The guys from Guys Games and Beer. They were phenomenal. We got here. We were setting up. He came over, introduced himself. He's like, which beer would you like to drink? I'm like, I'll take that one. And Kitty's like, I'll have nothing.
No beers for me.
But they were fantastic. And their booth looks so much better than ours.
They had a lot of cool stuff up there.
Yeah, this is our first booth at a con.
It's just incentive to do a better job next time for us, because seriously, they've got some banners. Really cool things going. Well, not just one banner, several banners and cool ones
and
circles
lights.
And designs, lights. Well, they're they do video.
Yes,
they're on Twitch.
I think they're Twitch and podcast. They're yeah, so you can see them at guysgamesandbeer.net. But they're a fun group of people. And it's not just guys. There's guys and gals. But they're really a fun group. And yeah, their booth looks amazing. Our booth, I'm like, well, we have these t-shirts we can pin against the curtain in the back. Did we take a picture of the booth yet?
I don't know that we did.
We'll take a picture right when we're done recording and we'll show you their booth versus our booth and how lame we are.
I've seen other people taking pictures of us as we record.
I know.
They're like, out there somewhere.
What are they doing? They're talking into colorful microphones. They must be famous. but it was kind of cool to have a booth, but we were never at it.
I was
think
a little
it's
bit.
Because yeah. We were a man down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it worked out just fine. It was a place where we could leave all of our stuff. We had cards, ribbons, pins, magnets, swag of all kinds out all weekend. And it did get taken. People
and it's where we're recording right now.
Yeah,
we were about 40 feet down the hall at our two tables, two designated tables to teach and play our games.
Yep.
And that's basically what we did from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday, Saturday. And then today we just did the 10 a.m. games.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about those games because I think we all discovered as we were teaching them and watching people play, it's like, oh, man, I really like this game. I want to play this game.
Yeah. I was surprised by the ones that I was kind of jealous of the people playing, where I was like, oh, I wish I'd sat down and played too.
I was really thankful that when I showed up on Friday night that there was an extra space in Burke's Gambit.
Yep. Yeah, we played Burke's Gambit. Well, we're jumping ahead of ourselves, but that's a good place. Let's do a little tease of the game. Because at 6 o'clock, we were playing Burke's Gambit, and we only had one game at 6 o'clock. And Kitty, notorious for... this is the game that she always accuses me of trying to manipulate the game while we were playing, because I was like, if you're good, you would do this. And if you're bad, you would do this. And then kind of backing her into a corner.
It's true.
It's true. But we were playing with three really cool people.
Yep.
And Kitty and I were playing. So it was a five-player game. And it was actually... You were having a lot of fun, I think.
Okay, so when you were describing the rules, you did it a little bit differently this time, and I really liked the way you described these rules. Also, I've noticed that when you were describing rules to gamers, they understand kind of a little bit more than friends who are sort of okay with gaming.
Right.
So when you went through each die, you talked about the special side, you talked about all the normal sides that are the same for all the die, and then you went through each one has a special ability, and you said, as it was brought up at the beginning, a good player with this die might want to do this, and a bad player might want to do this in this case.
Yeah, before anyone had roles and before we were actually playing the game.
Yes. So you could get a little bit of the strategy without feeling like, okay, now I'm sitting here with this die face up making a decision, and I am basically outing myself if I do one of the things Chris is telling me.
Yep.
So there was a little bit less pressure on that decision-making moment. And it does, we played really fast because one of our listeners, Steve, has
Lightning
like this
Steve.
Magic, magic ability to roll lightning bolts all the time.
Filled
so
your
these
engine
games
real
were
quick.
Just, yeah. They were going fast and they were really quick and fun.
Yep. Yeah, Steve was fantastic. And I kind of feel bad because as we were playing, we played a total, because then Sydney got there and we were playing a six-person game. We played two more. So I think we played a total of five games.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Steve rolled a die that he could actually do something with maybe five times. Everything else was a lightning bolt. Now, lightning bolts are what pushes that game forward. And when you get X number of lightning bolts, four for a five-player game, six for a six, six-player game, five... A number.
It was four and five.
Four and five. He would just keep rolling the lightning bolts. And you can't do anything else. Like, that's once that rolls, you're done.
Yeah. There's no decision making.
Nothing to do on your turn.
Nothing.
Yeah.
You just roll that, boom, done.
And I think, there was two. Maybe it was the very last game. Can we talk about the very last game for a second?
Yes.
So, Burke's Gambit.
I'm so proud of it.
Burke's Gambit, we should briefly describe what it is so that you can understand this game. It is it's a social deduction game, but with essentially 90% mechanics.
It is much more deduction than social.
Right. And the way this works is you draw a die, you roll the die, and one of X number of faces can come up. Like, obviously,
six,
there's six,
in fact.
Six on there, but two of each die has two hearts and two checks and one lightning bolt. So all of them have those same five sides there. The sixth side is unique per die. There's
three of each type.
Yeah, I think there's 24 dice total, and then there's eight different special sides. So you draw a die, you roll it. If you don't like it, you can re-roll it, and then you can use the power or you can save the power. Great. One of the things you can do is check to your left or right and see whether or not the person to your left and right is infected with a parasite. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a good allegiance or a bad allegiance, but that's different than being infected by the parasite.
It's separate.
It's a completely separate card. You also have a roll, but the roll for what we're talking about now won't come into play that much.
Yep.
The bad guys, Team Red, want the parasite to be on the ship at the end of the game. The good guys, Team Blue, want the parasite to be off. So once you have a certain number of lightning bolts, which Lightning Steve helped us get to very quickly, you have to determine who has the parasite. And you all have to kind of agree that this person has it. And then if you're good, you want to vote that person off the ship. If you're bad, you want to like, no, that's not where the parasite is. It's someplace else. So we get to the end. And I'm kind of suspicious on Steve. I'm not sure. He wavers a little bit on whether or not I have a parasite or not, because I possibly could have a parasite. And then the guy to his right could also possibly have a parasite. And everybody agrees.
That it's one of those two.
Yeah. Because everyone else said, oh, I'm on this person's left and I'm on this person's right.
And we checked that we check them and they don't have it, because people can be checked by people on both sides, or you could be checked by someone special if they rolled the special check dice. And so when Kitty and was on my right and the other person on my left, they both looked at each other when I said, "You both checked my card. Am I infected?" They both looked at each other, said no.
No, but you're not infected.
Yeah, it was like a hesitant, but then really a confident, no, you're not infected. And so then we were debating, was it Chris? Was it the other guy who's lying?
You were cleared, and I cleared Kitty because I checked her card, mm-hmm. and you had checked her card.
Yep.
And the person to your left, you got cleared.
I had checked.
And so the only person, I cleared Steve too, because I checked him. And he checked me, and he cleared me, but he was just kind of wishy-washy on it. So we went 1, 2, 3. I voted for myself to be airlocked, kicked out of the ship, because I'm like, taking one for the team. I think it's me. Because Kitty's like, I think you had said it was between me and one other person.
Yes.
Because the way everybody else had been checked, with everyone else being cleared twice, then it was either you or one other person, depending on which person Steve was lying about.
So
Steve had only checked Chris. No one had checked the other side. Because the player to your left had checked you, and the player to his right had checked Chris.
Yeah.
So he hadn't been cleared. So I kind of talked everyone into it. I think it's this guy.
Yep. So we went 1, 2, 3, voted. I got airlocked, and it turns out that Sydney
was infected.
Because Kitty and her evil, evil cohort
were sitting on each side of me.
And they had this eye contact moment where we looked at each other, and we both went, "No, you're not infected." And it was perfect.
And if either of them had been good, they would have outed the other because they both checked me. Yeah. But they were both bad.
And it should be noted, in this game, the evil players don't know who each other are. So that's why
we didn't know until that exact moment if one of us was going to mess it up for the other. Yeah, it was perfect.
So now that we've spent 5 minutes talking about Berk's Gambit, which was amazing, that was our Friday night. That's how it started. Now, one of the things I also did on Friday is I ran a game for Gaming MBS. I did a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, completely non-combat for 3.5 hours. We just like story and skills. And it was kind of a mystery of sorts. So that was fantastic. I also bought a bunch of stuff at the dealer's hall.
You did.
So I got Xanathar's Guide to Everything, which is a D&D 5th edition thing, which is early released here. You could buy it here, and all the proceeds were going to charity. And then I got a couple Middle Earth source books, also for 5th edition. I got Clank in Space. I know. I've been looking for it for a while. I got a couple role-playing game coasters, which we talked about before. These are wooden coasters with carvings, but specific to Gamehole Con. And then I got one other thing.
Those proceeds also went to charity.
Which is Everlife, right?
Yes.
I'm saying that wrong.
I'll look it up.
We're looking it up.
Keep going.
But I got one other thing. That Kitty was very, very, we both missed it until I look up as we're checking out. I'm like, what?
Get
Pandemic Legacy 2?
Season 2, we have it. It's in our hands. It's still in shrink wrap, but we are so excited.
So expect a side chat in about 6 months based on our pacing. But yeah, got the orange box. It was like, I just like, yes, we must have this. So now we are ready to set up for Pandemic Legacy Season 2. You will certainly hear about our introduction and plays as we go through. We promise not to spoil anything until we do a side chat where we will spoil everything, but you will be very aptly or very much informed of that. So that was our Friday and our dealer's hall. Let's see, I guess the Friday we played
Extra Life.
There we go.
Is the charity. They do online Dungeons and Dragons games where you can sponsor players and add bits and pieces to the game if you donate to the cause. They just did this one, did one this weekend for children's hospitals around the country.
Yep. And they did it live here. The Dungeons and Dragons guys did a live one here. I think I saw that they raised like $100,000 for it. So that was pretty cool. Let's see. Friday, we taught Terraforming Mars.
Yes.
Kitty was very proud of herself for teaching that one.
No, I wasn't. I did such a bad job. I'm really sorry, everyone who came to that game. That rule book is so confusingly laid out and misses a lot of the nuances of setup.
But I think everyone had fun.
Yeah. Once we figured it out, I needed a little bit of help. That was my first experience to teaching a game.
Especially at a convention to strangers.
Yes.
Like, you've taught us games and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant. At a convention to strangers in a time-constrained setting.
Yep.
Where they had other things going on. They needed to get out of this table on time, so.
Yeah, and not necessarily on purpose, but I guess I was looking at, you know, number of players maximum. So I just put the max players as the max number of people for the game. So all
for
of
every
our
single
games
game.
Were max players. So Terraforming Mars with five people. Everyone seemed to like it. They said, I don't know if I would play it with five again.
Yeah. It took a lot more time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of downtime between turns. And there's not a lot of things that happen that will affect your decision making on your turn.
Yeah, so there's a lot of waiting. I think Terraforming Mars, three players, is totally fine. It's a good game at three players. Then we did Tiny Epic Kingdoms.
You did that.
I did that, which went great. People loved it. They played through the first one, and then they added a mini expansion and played through again. So they got two games in their two-hour slot. Then we did Scythe and Sheriff of Nottingham. Actually, Kitty did that at the same time while I was DMing.
It's true.
Props, girl.
Yeah. Now, Scythe was awesome.
How many players did you put as our max for Scythe, Chris?
Only the maximum that it can contain, which is seven.
So, with the expansion characters, we played a seven-player game of Scythe. And honestly, it went really well. It was so cool looking, and I think that the players all had a ton of fun at that one.
Yep. Scythe is one of those games, if you haven't played it, it is one of the best games of last year. It's won awards, it's on the top of most lists. It's a great, great game. Seven players, it's like literally the book's like, we don't recommend it for your first play that you play with seven players.
So of course this was all of their first plays was with seven players, but they were all experienced gamers. So they picked it up really fast, especially because the Scythe player board in front of you does so much to help you take your turns and move things along, keep it going.
Yeah. For those who have been following us for 64 episodes, our episode one was all about Scythe and how easy it actually is to learn to play. And it worked out really, really well. And they had a great time. They finished in just over 3 hours, which for a seven
like three
player,
and a half.
Yeah. I mean, with a little bit of teaching time and...
That's true.
But but with seven people, it was finished way before we expected. We actually switched tables because we expected that one to overflow the 4 hours, and they didn't. They got done with a half hour to spare easily. Sheriff of Nottingham.
I'm not sure I actually taught this game or if they picked up the rule book and taught themselves while I was trying to teach Scythe. I will tell you, though, that table laughed harder than any table I think I heard at this convention. They were just cracking themselves up. Especially, I heard quite a few cheese jokes coming from that direction.
There's a lot of cheese in that game.
Yeah, if you haven't played Sheriff of Nottingham is a bluffing game where you're trying to, you put a number of cards in your pouch, literally a snap pouch, and you give it to the sheriff, and the sheriff will change every round, and you say, I have three cheeses, or three apples, or
it's
four.
It's just like bread. BS, bread. But with fun extra mechanics that make it that much sillier and that much more on theme. It's very Robin Hood.
Yep.
Lots of stuff going on.
It is a great, just fun game. It only plays up to five, but it's a blast. And I recommend it. You have a hard time not liking it, especially if it's just like, you know, five fun people sitting around a table. Five boring people sitting around a table, maybe they wouldn't like it. I don't know.
I don't know. Cheese joke goes over well with everyone.
Yeah, you do have a lot of cheese jokes there. And then we did Temporum because that's one of Sydney's favorite games. So
it's also one of my favorites. I really like Temporum. I think it's really fun. Also, I won the last time we played, which always colors it nicely in my memory.
Yeah. And Temporum is a game by, and I can never say his name, so I just say the same person who created Dominion. and this was, I think it's a game right after Dominion, but it's a time travel game, but very light on the time travel, but the board changes every time you play it. And you're really just trying to get your influence to the future, by moving wooden crowns up the tracks, and different things allow you to be able to do that. But it's very simple to learn. I think they were done in like an hour, 15, hour 10.
They actually played two games. They played two 45 minute games pretty much where, because we only had three players who attended that one. There were more people signed up, but three players came. And so they played with one board, and then we took off all the cards and put on new cards. And so they played with a different. So they got two experiences of different ages in that game.
Yep. And that one's, like I say, it's just really easy to learn, and it's a lot of fun. And it's, there's an equalizer. I mean, there's not much randomness into it at all. Like, it's all deterministic.
Other than the cards that are put out to play the game.
Yeah. So you randomize the board at the start and what cards you draw into your hand.
Yes.
But otherwise...
You do have a hand of cards, but there are two copies of every card, and a lot of cards do fairly similar things. Also, you have to make a decision about how you play your card. Each card can be played for an effect on the top of the card, or it can be scored for an effect on the bottom of the card, and you have to choose which way you're going to go with that, because it cannot be both.
Yeah, so like I say, Temporum, great game. And then we talked about Berk's Gamut, and then we went to sleep.
We did.
And it was, well, actually, no. First, we tried to find a place to eat.
That's where we ended up, at the lovely paint store of Madison, Wisconsin.
So I Googled, we wanted to play a game of Fantasy Realms. The three of us were together at that point. And we wanted to play a game of Fantasy Realms, one of our new favorite games. Like, this game is
for sure.
Amazing.
We also played it Thursday night when we got here.
So we were like, I Googled pub. And there was one that was like a mile down the road. So I'm like, great. We'll just jump in the car. We'll go to the pub. And it turned out that the pub was a paint store.
After taking us down some very sketchy roads.
No, that was Chris. Noticed it was a paint store and started, he was like, well, I can't deal with the GPS right now, so I won't say anything to Kitty or Sydney who can deal with the GPS. I'm just going to keep driving down creepy, creepy side streets.
So I eventually found a different pub and that we started driving towards. And as we were driving to that pub, Kitty's like, oh, are we going there? Which was, oh, what was the name of that place?
Something with a goat.
Yes, there was definitely a goat. And I'm like, no, that's not where we're going. But it's
but well it is lit now.
And it looks fun. So we went there.
And they had enough space on their tables for us to play Fantasy Realms. Yeah.
So we played Fantasy Realms. We had pulled pork.
Everything at that restaurant had barbecue sauce on it, including my nachos.
Which is why it was delicious. We got into a debate about Bitcoin, and the waiter came over and talked to us about Bitcoin.
You guys got into a discussion about Bitcoin. I checked Facebook out for a while.
Then we went back to the room, went to sleep, woke up on Saturday.
You got back to the room and still talked about Bitcoin for quite some time. There was a lot of Bitcoin at this gaming convention.
Quite a bit of research done into that Bitcoin.
I'm going to do an entire side chat on Bitcoin.
Oh, boy.
Probably not.
But I won't be on it.
So Saturday we woke up and did Cry Havoc and Tiny Epic Galaxies.
I want to play Cry Havoc again now.
That game is beautiful to look at. It's just so cool.
It's really cool to look at. And I really like the asymmetrical races. At first, when we were playing it, I was like, I don't know that I like this. I feel like it's really unfair. But watching other people play it, I was like, oh no, like now I see, like, because I was the human race. And the human race does feel like at first you're just like.
Not in this game, but the very first time you played.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was not playing this. I was only teaching it. So I didn't actually sit down and play anything but Berk's Gambit this weekend.
You played Scythe the last three rounds for
a
player who had to leave.
I took over for a player who had to leave. That didn't feel like I was really playing that game, because honestly, she had set up such a good strategy that I didn't have to make any choices. It was just, I need to take the next step. I need to take the next step. Yeah. So, and Scythe is a little bit like that if you set up your strategy well.
Yeah. But back to Cry Havoc. So now you're watching it.
I'm watching it played. I had played the humans previously, the only other time I had played this game. And you do. You feel like you're just killing it at the beginning. You are expanding all over the board. You have all these territories controlled. You get to enable scoring at the early rounds. You're scoring for territories. You're scoring for crystals left and right. You're way ahead of everyone on the track. And then all of a sudden, the other two races get their engines going, and you just feel like you get destroyed.
Especially if the Trog is there as an NPC and being played by the board, then they're affecting everyone equally. In a four-player game, they're played by the fourth player.
Yeah. So we did not have a fourth player. We only had three players for this game. I think it plays best at three players after watching it a few times.
Yeah, there's a two-player board. So Cry Havoc has a three-player side and a three- and four-player side.
Yes.
And then the other side of the board is a two-player side. So if you're only playing two races, there's less regions to, that you can get access to. But the three-player side allows you to fight against the essentially the NPC Trog, which are the indigenous race. Four players, you have a player that takes control of certain aspects of that race. So that's where I agree it does play well at three. And I also agree that I will play this game pretty much any time. The expansion is coming out within... It should be out now. It came out in Essen, which was last week. So I'm going to keep an eye out for the expansion. And then we'll have to play it again.
Yeah, I'm excited. Because I watched some strategies that worked and some that didn't. And now I want to get my feet wet again. I want to get back into it.
Yep. Tiny Epic Galaxies went fantastically. Somehow I taught all the Tiny Epic stuff, which was pretty easy to teach. And Kitty took all of the big games.
I don't like Tiny Epic games.
Yeah, I love them.
I did this to myself. I chose these hard games because I was like, I don't want to do it.
Everyone who played Tiny Epic Galaxies really, really enjoyed it. I want to play with the expansion now, and I just want to play more of it. There's not enough time in the day to play all these games.
That's true.
Great Western Trail and Pandemic Cthulhu.
So you did take on Great Western Trail. And I am so glad because I was even just watching you guys do it. I was like, I don't know what's happening anymore.
So by this point on Saturday, I was exhausted. Like,
yes.
I'm like, I'm going to teach this game. Then I'm going to go back to the hotel. I'm going to take a nap.
But and you kept being like, I'll just sit with a few more rounds. Once they figure it out, I'll sit for a few more rounds. They'll figure it out. I'll sit for a few more rounds. 2 hours later, you're still there
answering final questions.
Yeah, I was like, well, I'll do the final scoring part at least. But as long as I started drinking a lot of coffee and kept like standing up and not like, you know, moving around and stuff. But Great Western Trail is one of my favorite games. And there was four people signed up for it. Only three people showed up. And one of the players like, oh, you should sit down and play. I'm like, I'm really too tired to even like focus on being able to play. I can teach it. I can make sure everything's going well, but I just can't commit to actually playing. And it turns out I was there the entire time.
You
I could have played. But Great Western Trail, there is no downtime to this game.
None.
Like, even with three, four, you could play the thing with eight players, and you'd still only have maybe a minute and a half of downtime between your turns.
I don't think you can actually play with eight players.
You can't. It only goes up to four. But
if you had eight people trying, the turns go so quickly. You can see what you're going to do from three steps away, so you know what you're going to do on your turn. The turns go pretty quick. You feel like it's moving the whole time.
It was, yeah. And so I was like, as they were playing, I'm like, oh, man, I could be playing. But I was playing vicariously? I think
that's a word, yes.
Through them and, like, watching them in different plays. And the blue player, she was amazing. Like, her score was, like, the highest score I've ever seen in this game. That's awesome.
Hope you learned a thing or two.
I was like, everything she was doing, like, you are... I felt bad for the other two guys. Like, there was no chance for them to win. I think the score was, like 75, 86, and 127. It was that, like, difference between them. But she was just owning it. She nailed it. And so at a certain point, I'm just like, all right, I'm here for the end. And the scoring of that game is a tricky because there's like, you know, it's I think 13 different scoring categories that you can score on. So I was there for that.
The saladiest point salad of all games.
Yeah. But Temic to Cthulhu, you said, went really, really quickly.
It did. It went really well. They had not played Cthulhu Pandemic before, but they were all familiar with Pandemic. So you just teach the differences. And with a co-op, it feels like it's easier for them to take over because if I'm giving them any more hints and like these are just the steps you take or you're these are how many actions, it. I'm basically playing the game for them. So that one was so easy for me to take a step back. And they had a good time.
Yeah, we almost decided after that point we're just going to have co-op games for all of our games going forward.
But Imhotep was our next game that I taught. And I love that game.
I'm surprised you didn't sit in because this is another game where you had four people. Only three showed up. And I was sort of expecting you to sit in and be the fourth person.
I didn't want to destroy our listeners. Sorry. I really like this game. And I finally talked people into so they played one round and that took about 45 minutes again. So they flipped over the tiles to side B. And that's the first time I'd actually seen side B tiles played. And now I got to see both sides and I know because you are allowed to
mix and match.
I'm like, I know which ones I want from each side and I'm excited. And I'm going to make you and Josh play with me again, even though you guys were both like,
eh. No, I liked it. So Imhotep is a light action selection, maybe?
I almost call it worker placement, except that your workers are stones.
Yeah, so you're basically taking these stones from your sled. You have to collect stones, and then you take these stones and put them on boats. And then at a certain point, you can decide to bring a boat to a particular area, whether it's full of stones or not. There's some strategy to whether or not you should, because other people's stones might be
there
on it.
There have to be so many before you can move it, but yep. It does not have to be full.
Right. And then each area you bring it to scores in a slightly different way. So there's advantages to going here or going there or whatever the case is. It looks relatively generic on the box. It's just like an Egypt theme, but it's a really simple game, and it's simple to learn, but there's a lot of depth and strategy there.
Yes. It's really fun. It's very puzzly, but without being too fiddly.
Yep. But meanwhile, well, Kitty and I are teaching games and hanging around our tables and not hanging around at the booth.
I got to walk around the whole convention.
She's like, I'm just going to go, I'm going to go hit things.
It was actually pretty fantastic. I got to walk around and see the dealer's hall and some of the other rooms going on. But in the back, on the other side of the hall that they were teaching games, there was a LARP going on. And I had heard about LARP before. LARP is live action role play. And there are lots of different LARPs out there. Some LARPs you play one-offs at conventions where you might get a role and you are given a world. And within the world, you have to complete something. Or maybe they're even all the way up to like reenactments of things. People do these as a hobby outside of conventions. Well, here at the convention, the LARP Last Hope, which is a live action role play created by Ryan Mass Jepp, he ended up having demos here and actual fights and weapons, and all of the people that play this LARP were there to give instruction and teach people how to play, but also to have them be involved in the actual LARP. So while I was there, I walk up to them and they asked me if I wanted to try it out. So I did. I was handed a sword and asked if I wanted a shield. So I had a shield and a sword. This was after, actually, we had our friends here at Gaming and BS. Brett's two kids were participating in one of the demos, and I was watching them. And if they could do it, I could totally try. So I got in there with my sword and shield, and I got into the front lines with the shield wall, and we had some, I think they're called Mordok, come at us, and they were in full garb. They were basically looking like the kind of orcs you might see in Lord of the Rings, but their race was called Mordoks. And then everyone on our side, we had foam, of course, not actual swords and shields, but we had foam swords and shields. There was actually also some archers, and they had bows with they were arrows with, at the end of them, they were covered in foam and wrapped. And then on the other side of the arrow there was a penny in there so that no way could the arrow actually pierce anything. And when it hit you, it didn't hurt that hard. And so it was a point system. The armor that everyone was wearing gave them a certain amount of points. So without any armor, I was just in my t-shirt and jeans, I was given 4 points. My shield gave me 3. And so every time I felt a hit, we were actually swinging these swords at each other, and I had an arrow hit me, and there were some spells happening, and it was really cool. But every time it hit me, I would deduct a point. I would verbally say shield if it hit my shield, or armor if it hit my armor, so that they know that they got in a legal hit. But it would be just a battle, like an actual, like you can imagine while you're playing D&D, these people are actually fighting each other. And the rules of the game were to keep it within the world. You had to be realistic. So if you were to do a very big swing with your sword or a very long sword that would be very heavy, then the rules would be you would have to basically take it behind your head or take a very big swing with it, so that even though it was a lighter sword than an actual huge sword would be, you would be taking the time to swing with it that you would if it was real. And then after the course of the battle, I had taken enough points where my leg was wounded, so I was kneeling on the ground, but our side had won the battle. So our cleric came over and healed my leg using some of her mana. And in the game, they actually also have magic. And how they represent that is they have rubber bands on their hands. And if they take a rubber band and they move it from one side of their hand to the other, and they then use the hand motion to do that, they can say a word like push. And if they're pushing toward you, once they move the mana from one wrist to the other and they say the word push, you then in game take a few steps back. whatever you're doing, you've been pushed, so the magic has hit you, and that affects you in game. And so this live action role play was super realistic and so much fun, and I had a blast hitting people with my sword.
All I remember is I went over there and I saw you in your t-shirt and jeans, because you were wearing a Tabletop Game Talk t-shirt.
I sure was.
And you had a shield and a sword, and you were being taught how to use it, and I'm just like, okay. And then I walked away, but your description just now, I don't want to be interested.
It was so much fun. And everyone there was so into it. These are a fantastic community of people. They describe themselves as a medium contact, low fantasy, full immersion LARP in Wisconsin. And they're in the Madison area. Their website, you can go to www.lasthopelarp.com. And they have a Facebook group as well. And they actually meet once a week and on a weeknight, depending on the week, they practice. And so they will actually spar with each other. So they are learning the skills of sword fighting, and the archers are learning the skill of archery. And in the in-game, there are different ways to have magic. So there are magicians and witches and other types of races might have magic. And they practice using their mana. So they actually have the rubber bands on their hands, and they like practice the moving one to the other, and they get efficient at that. And their rules in-game, depending on what you're wearing, and some of them are in full armor, and that gives them more points.
Someone was walking by one of the games that we were doing this morning.
And
yeah. It was like clank, 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 clank. And I'm like, this is why people who wear plate mail have disadvantage on stealth checks. You heard them walk all in the D&D. Way through.
Yeah. It's true.
And that guy had about 18 points of armor on. So even though he's only getting hit with foam swords and each hit is 1 point, he could say the word armor or say the word hit, and he could say that 18 times. Whereas in my jeans and my t-shirt, I could say that 4 times before the next hit to my leg would make me have to kneel, or the hit to my arm would make me have to drop the shield. And so they have a really good system as well as a world built around it.
So if you can't tell, she wants to be involved in this on a regular basis.
It's kind of cool because they also behind that have a world. So they have merchants who sell things, and they have a bit of an economy. And because they do this outside in February, they have an actual political meeting, so they could sit in a warm tavern and not have to fight outside in the freezing cold.
I like that. So we will put the link in the show notes for this. Sydney's going to remind me to do that. And so that was one thing that you did. The other thing you did that night
was... we were teaching resistance.
Yes, we were teaching resistance.
Yes. So we got that all set, and Sydney walked away. And all of a sudden, Chris is like, I have to go and see what Sydney's doing, because...
I knew what she was... She's like, oh, I told Andy Looney... Well, I told one of the people that was with Andy Looney that she would go and play Homeworld against him.
Because they told me that they love when he's challenged in it, because he loves winning. And he's won most every game he's ever played. And because he created Homeworld, Chris and I have played it all the time. And I was very excited to play someone else in the game of Homeworld.
Now, Sydney and I had played him before last year at Gen Con. And combined, we beat him, but he was playing Andy versus everybody. So he was playing literally, I think, 10 other games at the same time. Not of Homeworld. We were only the ones playing Homeworld. And we were kind of like working
hive-minding
together.
It.
Yeah. So we did win. Last year at Gamehole Con, I challenged Andy. And if you listen to that episode, you know I did not win. And the two times I played him, I was destroyed. So Sydney's playing him, and I walk in, and she doesn't actually see me there, but I'm watching her play, and she's getting destroyed.
Absolutely trounced.
So I come back out, and I'm talking to Kitty, and I'm like, okay, so I'm going to watch her. I expect her she's going to be done like in seconds.
So that game ends.
Yes, yeah. And so once that game is over, he does win, and he wins fantastically. It was a very easy win for him. One of the person there who had originally suggested that I play him asked if I would like to play him again, and thinking that he would enjoy it if we played it again, and I would like to have a second chance, he was willing to. So we played it a second time. And in the second round, I picked a strategy that was quite different than the one that I did the first time, and I actually ended up beating Andy Looney in the game of Homeworld.
So now she's wearing a medal, the 15th ever given out.
And the medal says on the back, I beat Andy Looney in a game of Homeworld. And he had these created specifically for people who were able to beat him. They have to challenge him and beat him, I think, at a convention in a game of Homeworld.
Anywhere. You can call him up and say, hey, meet at such and such down the road from here, he'll come out play
you. It's probably a lot easier to find him at conventions.
Yes. So I have yet to win this medal But my lovely, lovely bride has now flaunted it in front of me all day long.
And I will be wearing it at almost every convention I go to ever.
Yes. I'm very, very proud. You did a great job. And
it was also a lot of fun. I love playing Homeworlds. We were able to play. They have a life-size version. And so these were cardboard cutouts. And the smalls of the three sizes of the pyramids were about the size of my hand. So medium and large were even bigger than that. And we were playing on the floor in the Looney Labs room at the convention here. So the whole room was able to watch us play. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah, this means I will always try to destroy you from this point on.
Transitive property. You beat me, you've beaten Andy.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. Doesn't get me a medal.
If you're interested in what this looks like, it's on our Instagram. I've been Instagramming all weekend.
And our Instagram is Tabletop Game Talk.
Yep.
And then after that, Kitty actually goes back to the hotel room.
Yes.
Because she plays the baby card.
I did.
Which is fine. And Sydney and I
should get an actual card printed up. This yes. baby. Just be like, I'm not going out tonight. Baby.
Sydney and I went to the Gaming and BS. I'm going to call it a meetup. Yep. Over in the, I always say Clarendon, but that's an allergy
Clarion.
Thing. Clarion. which I met the manager last year and this year, and she's amazing. So we're going to stay there next year. And we spent probably 2.5-3 hours kind of hanging out with a bunch of people.
Just chatting all around. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. Sydney made great friends with Brett's wife.
And also one of the people that plays in the Last Hope LARP is friends with Brett's wife. And so all three of us just hung out. It was so super fun.
And the kids.
And the kids who were playing in the LARP, who had the swords and were beating on each other. We bonded over that.
Yep. So
they can hang better than I can.
Yeah. But yeah, like, and I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it recently. So Brett and Sean, they do a podcast called Gaming and BS. It's focused primarily on role-playing. They are at 164 episodes. So we started when they were at 100. And they've done one episode on board games. But so they're primarily role-playing games. And I listen to them every single week. And our format is very much modeled after what they started doing. I have slightly different segments and, you know, we have different topics, but I really like what they do and they're really, really good people. So I've known them now for, well, I guess I met them both here last year for the first time. And then we've gone to a number of conventions together. So if you can't tell, that's the LARP starting in the background. and they are fantastic. So if you're into role-playing games, listen to the Gaming and BS podcast. I will say it is definitely PG-13, only for language, not for content. But they are really, really good guys.
They were actually having a competition here at the convention. If you could beat their two kids, Brett's two kids, in the game of Happy Salmon, then you won a dice bag with their faces on it. And I ended up playing their children and beating them. So I now have a dice bag with their faces on it.
Yep. And last year, they were handing out little, like the travel size whiskey bottles with their label on it. Like, they have the hookups for all the coolest stuff. And I have another pint glass from them, and they're amazing. I can't really say enough good things about Brett and Sean. Let's see. Sunday.
Today,
we had two games. Tiny Epic Western and Blood Rage were at 10 a.m. So Katie taught Blood Rage.
I did. And now I want to play Blood Rage too. I'd say the three games that I watched, played, and now like really want to get back on the table were Cry Havoc, Scythe, and Blood Rage.
I think all awesome games.
Yeah. Yes.
I think we can make that happen for all of them because they are the types of games that should hit the table.
They should.
Yep. And I believe Blood Rage was episode 3. So if you not coincidence that we like these games.
Picking good games back in the day.
And then I taught Tiny Epic Western and our fourth player didn't show up for that. So
I ended up playing.
Yeah, Sydney was here and like, why don't you sit down and play with them? She looked a little reluctant, but I think you had fun.
Oh, I had a blast. I kind of felt bad in the beginning because I was accelerating faster than the other players, but I did end up losing by 1 point.
By 1 point. Your last two rounds, I'm like,
I was making moves that I thought might help me in the end game, not really focusing on the current portion of the game.
You were, because I thought you were so far ahead. like so far ahead. And then you lost, it was like 70 to 69.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's close.
Yep. And it could have swung either way because in that game, you can have duels because it's a Western. And that duel card gives you 2 points. So had you dueled the very last, and you really could have just dueled anybody, as long as you would have won, that would have swung it. But that's how close it was, which is great. Like, close games are great like that.
It was great.
Our Blood Rage game, we had one player who looked like they were ahead the whole time, and they ended up coming in second as well. So
it's a theme.
It happens. Yep. It really does, especially when somebody has been playing towards the end game from the very beginning. You know, if you know what you're looking for, you really can just suddenly like, oh, and my last thing I'm going to do, move me 40 points forward. All right. Yeah, that really changes the way the scoreboard looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, that's one of the reasons I like victory point games.
Yeah.
Not the company. The company's fine, but you know, games that are based on victory points. Because while you're playing the game, you're interested in developing your engine, developing your strategy, getting something going. And it's not till the very end where it's like, okay, and the final tally is.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about at the beginning, where it's like, if you don't enjoy the journey, the ending shouldn't make or break the game for you.
And we did a whole episode on Point Salad Games where I think you and me both came to that conclusion. Like, we love that kind of scoring where it really, you can't calculate exactly what you're going to have. You can't calculate exactly what your opponents are going to have. So you really have to focus on the journey. And that's the kind of game that makes Josh crazy, because Josh is like, I need to know what's happening.
Somebody's strategy might be to have points that show up on the board during the game, while somebody else might have them show up at the end. And yes. Josh has no idea who has what where.
Yeah.
But it's why I love it. And it's why I love, you know, with Great Western Trail, there's just so much you can do and so much going on. And everything you can do, it feels like you're getting further. And it's I just love these games. So, do we have anything else to say about this place?
Fantastic convention. Definitely coming back next year.
Yeah. So, and it's limited. They are growing. They've almost doubled every year. This is the 5th year. Within the next 2 to 3 years, they will be at maximum capacity, and they don't have any intention of moving out of this convention center, as far as I know.
Also a lovely convention center.
Yeah, and it's a great convention center. The area is, there's not a whole lot walking distance, but they bring in food trailers.
Those were really cool.
Yep. So they're kind of like food trucks, but only they, you know, tow behind
they're
a truck.
They're parked all weekend.
They're parked all weekend. Yeah. So the food here is really good. And everything, like, you drive here. So Madison, you can drive to pretty much anything within 5 minutes to get to wherever you want to be. But
I was
yeah.
very sad to find out that their Taco Bell is under construction.
Yeah, next year.
Next we'll go to Taco year. Bear.
That's sad. We're like, oh man, I can't wait till we go to Taco Bell next year or today on the way home.
All right, like, Taco Bell is my pregnancy thing. It's also my non-pregnancy thing, but I like, sometimes baby wants Taco Bell. What can I say?
Yeah, no, playing the baby card, that's totally fine.
Boom.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Hopefully this wasn't, you know, we wanted to recap our experience here, but we also wanted to kind of touch on like the stuff that we learned, because we did learn a lot. Like, this is the first time we've run so many games. Actually, it's the first
Some
time
of
we've
us
run
any games.
Yeah. And watching other people play games, you just get a different perspective of it, and you're still involved. And like, we had a great time, and thank you for all of our listeners that stopped by and said hi. And we'll be here next year as well. Sydney and I will be on the Dice Tower Con cruise the first week of December. So if you happen to be on there, there's not a lot of people. It's like, I think 600 adults, 200 kids, will be there for the convention. But if you know,
come find us, we'll play a game.
Us. Yep. That is not going to be something we work. We're not going to do a live show. We're not going to like focus on it at all. It is literally a vacation for Sydney and I.
Hopefully.
We're just going to go and play games. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, you can go Facebook/Tabletop Game Talk Podcast on Twitter, Tabletop Game TLK on Instagram, Tabletop Game Talk, or you can follow me. I'm at Game Master Chris on Twitter. If you want to leave us an iTunes review, we love iTunes reviews. iTunes reviews are the best. And I just like watching those numbers.
Apparently easier to do now.
Yeah. All you got to do is scroll down to the bottom of the podcast list of episodes at the Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. And then you should be able to click the amount of stars, 5, of course, right there. And then it'll give you the option whether you want to write a review or not.
That's for people who are on iOS 11 iPhone. If you're on Android, it's a little bit trickier, but you get bonus brownie points if you do that. You can also support us on Patreon. That's tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. All of these links will be in the bottom of the show notes. Remember, if you're a patron, then you get automatic entry into all our contests. And a reminder, we will announce the winners of our October contest on next week's episode, and we will announce the November giveaway of what we're going to give away on next week's episode. However, you can start entering now if you want to email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com with November giveaway. Your entry will start then.
Remember to include your name in that email, yeah. Your full name.
Yep.
First, full real name.
Yeah, first and last name.
We believe
name.
You, Michael Knight.
Oh, yes, I believe you now, although I may request a photocopy of your driver's license at some point. For now, we're going to be okay. So with that said, I'm actually, you know something? I'm going to make Sydney read the outro.
Oh, all right.
No. All right, here goes. Go for it.
Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review, email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. I'm starting strong, guys. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Chiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, and Jason Rodney. Until next week, when they talk about standard deck card games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So I think that Stefan was the only one that you got wrong, which happens to be Josh's brother, which happens to be totally fine because Josh isn't here.
Yeah. Stefan, if you want your name pronounced right, send your Josh brother back on the podcast.
Although, in all fairness, Josh is not here because Stefan's in the UK, and that's why Josh went back.
Ugh.
So,
such a tangled web.